The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Why are so many marriages unhappy today in so many countries, in so much of the world? Does it make any sense? Here we are living in the modern world where Mrs. Average Housewife, in the Western world of affluence at least, has more of the material goods, the services and pleasures than ever before. More gadgets, more step savers and labor-saving devices, more machines to make her work easier, and more time on her hands than ever before. A larger percentage of women working to supplement the family income than ever before. At a time when, truly, millions of housewives have virtually been emancipated from the home. And yet a time when, paradoxically, housewives are notoriously unhappy. Now, why should that be? It's a time when we should have more marital happiness because people have more of the goods and the pleasures and services they think go to make life more enjoyable. And yet we find divorce rife in our countries, the destruction of the home proceeding at a dizzying pace, vast percentages of juvenile criminals come from broken homes. The majority of homicides in the United States involve husbands and wives or estranged ones. Illegitimacy, forced marriages, plural marriages, separations without divorce, miserable homes just barely hanging together, like as not because of social pressure or maybe the concern for children, but where all marital happiness is long since gone and where they're just really existing together, living like a pair of strangers in a sort of a glamorous hotel, but not really living together as husband and wife. These are becoming increasingly symptomatic of a modern sickness of ours in the Western world, the sick home, sick marriages. Now, in the United States, as I've said recently, we'll have to apologize, I guess, to the rest of you people around the world in South America and Australia, even Britain and Canada, for that matter, because the United States leads the world in divorce. We're out-divorcing you Scandinavians and people in South Africa, but it's bad enough if you've got any divorce in any country, let alone to lead the world in those statistics. But why? What causes divorce? When you go to the experts, you find that almost as if with one voice, the sociologists, the divorce lawyers, the judges, and marriage counselors who deal with this type of thing, up to the hundreds and the thousands of hours of agonizing conferences with couples who now absolutely hate one another, where only months or maybe weeks in some cases, or perhaps years before, here they were breathing all these sweet nothings in each other's ear, talking about forever and ever, getting all rapturous when my favorite song is on. I think one of the favorite songs today is, what was it called? The Second Time Around, isn't it? Where people are even trying to glamorize divorce. What causes divorce? Well, all of them, as if with one voice, say it is courtship. It's preparation for marriage. It's that which leads up to marriage. That's what's wrong with marriages today. In other words, dating. So I've begun a series on this worldwide educational program, The World Tomorrow, about dating, letting the boys and girls, the young people, talk because they have a lot to say about it, hearing from the divorce lawyers and the sociologists and the marriage counselors and what they have to say about it. And you know, the deeper you look into it, the more you realize that vast percentages of people who stand before the JP and say, I do, don't really. They just don't. They say they do, but they don't. What they mean is, I maybe do, or perhaps I will. We'll see later. What they mean is that given enough time, it may be true that, yes, I do. But they don't really. And it's about time we ask why. Many American marriages, says Dr. I.A. Birch, who is divorce psychologist of the Illinois Circuit Court in Cook County, are failures because girls are trained today to be sex symbols and not very much else. Consequently, when a marriage gets into trouble, they have very little to fall back on except their sex appeal, and of course divorce usually results because the gal thinks she can go out and use that same appeal on some other character who doesn't really yet know what she's like, and vice versa. If a girl flunks algebra today, she just increases her number of dates. She figures if she can get a husband who needs algebra. Now this doctor concluded by saying girls must be taught to develop themselves as persons. Well, as Dr. James H. Bossard has said, and he is an elder statesman on marriage, considered quite a serious student of the subject, He says the trouble with American marriage is American courtship. He talked about marriage and the family as humanity's most important and sacred institution, deserving earnest contemplation and even prayer. But what's happening as young couples gaily skip off to get married today is not very much contemplation and precious little, if any, prayer, I'll guarantee you that. Most people, would spend an awful lot more time looking into the pedigree of a pet, as I said before, than they do in looking into the various proclivities and the aptitude, the characteristics, the heredity, the environment, the background, the education, the likes and dislikes, and all that type of thing of a prospective mate. Now, I have tried to put this in 7 major steps, and I believe it can be completely and perfectly put in 7 major steps on how to select a mate. And the first one I dealt with is physical health, and that has to do with physical appearance and heredity and environment and everything that forms and shapes the physical creature not only now but on through his life. And what kind of physical health your wife or your husband is going to be in the next 10 years. Physical health, why did I put it first? Well, because most people think physically. And because physical attraction is the very first thing that leads people to want to date one another. Now, dating ought to be investigated because dating is a brand new thing in the Western world. Just because it's new doesn't make it bad, but we ought to find out about its fruits and its results and find out whether or not dating is being done constructively. Because, you know, one philosopher once said, by their fruits you know them. Now, this philosopher was also a teacher and a preacher and also a messenger and also a future king. He's quoted in the Bible. His name was Jesus Christ. And you know, that's a pretty straightforward statement. You can find out about whether or not something is good by the eating thereof. In other words, the old adage, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, you know, by what it produces. Now, American dating is producing divorce. American dating and Nordic, or shall I say Scandinavian dating, and West German dating, and South African and Australian and Tasmanian dating, for that matter, happens to be producing more and more divorces, more and more teenage venereal disease, more and more unwed mothers and illegitimate children, more and more shotgun marriages. It just is. That's what it's producing. And so it ought to be investigated to find out just whether or not the type of dating that is entered into in this Western world is really good. Now, how much have you looked into what you believe and what your children believe, the people around you believe, with regard to dating and the social custom that we call dating in this Western world? Many people don't even give it a thought. And the idea seems to be that young people are given absolute permissiveness to meet with one another in a public place and to go off by themselves at tremendously early ages without benefit of parents around or anyone older. And the idea that is generally accepted is that it's a law of nature that young men and women, and I mean by this sometimes even in the age like 9, 10, and 11, have full reign to meet at school, at parties, in other people's homes, at dances, on street corners, and then to pair off, unchaperoned, of course, and to promptly fall in love. And the mood is set by the music and the crepe paper and the environment. And all around you, you see kids smiling at each other over copes. And you hear all of the statements about how they claim we're too young, but we're not really. We're plenty old enough to know what love is, because we can tell by assessing the degree of the tingle up and down our spine. And young people then rush to the altar with or without parental approval. How many young people say, well, I lied about my age? And, as I said, this kind of courtship is very new. Now, the fact that it is new does not by itself prove that it is wrong, but by looking into the fruit that it's producing, we ought to be able to find out whether or not it is good. Now, some of the greatest idols of teenagers today tell you it's not. Among them, a singer by the name of Pat Boone, and other people, doctors. Well, they're not all doctors, of course, but sometimes, you know, they've had to get pretty deeply into the morass that people have made out of their lives, and they get a little bit disgusted by all of the hate that they see and the steady diet of hate that children are reared upon today because of destroyed marriages. And so they investigate, they ask questions, and almost as if with one voice, as I've said, they find out that American courtship, dating in other words, are highly romanticized notions about love and what it is, happens to be what's wrong with today's marriages. Now, I
mentioned physical health and how people ought to be aware of physical health. I won't recapitulate that again and go over it, because the second major point was mental health. And you will be absolutely dumbfounded to find out the tremendous problems that many people face in this neurotic world of ours, where it is said one out of 12 living Americans, or to yet be born in the next decade, may spend part of his life in a mental institution. Pill gulping and the use of escapism in various forms, whether trips, and I don't mean LSD in this case, but actual physical trips of changing your geographical location, or whether it means escape by boozing it up. Some people are just twice a year drunkards, and we're coming to that time of the year again, aren't we? But escapism in all of its forms, by taking some type of a drug to directly alter your mental perspective, this is done by vast percentages of our modern American and British and other people. And it's about time that young people, when they date and when they court one another and prepare for marriage, began to think about the possibility of finding themselves hitched with someone with real mental problems. Now, you know, when you pass by the average teenage group, you're passing by one out of 10 who has mental problems. There are 19 million Americans of both sexes who have serious enough mental aberrations that they ought to have, as some people say at least, psychiatric treatment. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means your chances are 1 out of 10 of dating or going with someone who, if he doesn't have now or she doesn't have at this moment, is going to develop serious mental problems, serious enough that doctors would say they ought to be subjected to treatment. Now, what kind of a rude awakening is it going to be for young people who go skipping down the aisle to get married and say, I do, to find out a little bit later that their mate that they now have ended up with has all kinds of weird ideas about diet? Maybe he thinks he's being followed, or maybe she develops dementia praecox or schizophrenia, or maybe they have all kinds of weird ideas about religion or government or art or parental authority or their studies or teachers, and their tastes in music and literature and language are a little bit weird. Maybe they're just a little bit off in their upper story. Now, the time to find out about that would be ahead of time, wouldn't it? And so, again, almost as if with one voice, all these marital counselors say, take your time. They say, get to know your prospective mates. And that means in all different situations. That means over a long span of time, to where you've had opportunity to thoroughly discuss all types of subjects. I don't mean whether he or she is a smooth dresser or a good looker or a cool dancer or a good surfer or a wild driver or the real life of the party or anything else, but what are their ideas about religion? What kind of religious background do they have? What about their parents? Are you going to find out after you've said I do that one mate or the other is going to insist that the children are reared in a different kind of a religion or a faith than you have even understood or remotely embraced? What is their attitude toward authority? Are you going to find somebody who later on is antisocial and hostile toward all constituted authority and who is going to teach your children to be so? What are their attitudes toward their parents? Are they secretive? Do they have a father complex? Do they feel mother-dominated? Does this guy that you're going with that you think has such a kooky hairdo and is such a good left-handed pitcher for the ball team absolutely hate his old man? A lot of people do, you know. They have a complex. This is what policemen will tell you. They will tell you that many, many teenagers who go into dope addiction and narcotics usage, teenagers who will beat an older person, who will be found guilty of muggings and of purse snatchings on elderly people, are psychologically taking out their venom against their own parents, and that they have hated their own parents because they've been reared on a diet of hate. What are the attitudes of the person you date about parents? Now, maybe you've got a nutty notion that your parents ought to be hated too. And maybe the two of you are sort of seeking sympathy in each other's arms, and you discuss about your parents together, about how your old man doesn't understand you, and your mother is way out of touch, and they're both a couple of old fogies, and after all, what will they know about love? They've only been married 20 years. This is the attitude young people have. I mean, too many young people, not all. I'm not speaking about all of them at all, but I'm speaking about, let's all admit, too many of them. But investigate it. Take your time. Look into it. What are her thoughts or his about art, about music? What kind of music do they go for? Now, you don't just have to like Bach, you know. You don't just have to go for Grieg or Liszt or somebody else. But on the other hand, you'd better pretty much appreciate the same things if it's at all possible. Because if you find out later on that the long hairdo and the jerking gyrations in the dance were only a passing fancy, and that deep down inside the guy was an admirer of maybe Tchaikovsky, you're going to have sort of a rude awakening in a couple of years. Now, maybe he is an outdoors type. He loves to rough it and to camp, and she can't stand it. She likes to stay indoors. Well, that could be a little bit of a problem later. Maybe not a huge problem. Maybe not one that can't be overcome. But nevertheless, a problem. But it's about time you found out about mental attitudes. Now let's talk about mental quirks. You know, mental quirks can be hereditary. You know that colleges, universities, and even big corporations, when they're trying to survey applications for prospective students or employees, they want to find out about past mental history. You know that especially in security risks involving government agencies, people want to find out whether there have been any mental aberrations. Have you got an aunt, a sister, a brother, or a parent who has been confined to a mental institution? Now, that may not prove anything. Maybe it's a mental illness, as they call it today. Maybe it was completely overcome. Maybe it was a temporary or a transitory thing, but you better find out, haven't you? Mental illness can also be environmental, and there's another facet of mental illness. People dub it mental illness, which is in a completely different area of which few people seem to know very much. And that's in the spiritual realm. You know that mental illnesses can be diagnosed way ahead of time? I mean that there can be a pretty fair likelihood that if there has been a long history of mental illness in a person's family, that there could be a collision course in this person's life. That doesn't mean that you should totally avoid marrying the person, but it ought to be taken into consideration. It ought to be thought of, and marriage should be entered into with both eyes wide open. It is becoming increasingly rare today to find a sound and thoroughly balanced mind. It just is. Now, you'd better realize that's true. Sound, keenly sharp and alert, intellectual, but very balanced minds are increasingly becoming a difficult commodity to come by. Now, I'm not talking about a lot of characters who fancy themselves intellectual and don't even know the true meaning of the word. I'm talking about balance. I'm talking about that all-around balance that adapts a person to all of the problems and the issues around him. That makes him keep a cool head in emergencies. He doesn't come apart at the seams. That gives him that ability to listen to somebody else's opinions and give them their due, but also to hold his own with a certain amount of stability and integrity. That gives him that mental outlook on life and on situations in life and other people that will avoid frustrations. He doesn't tie up in knots. He's not shaky. He doesn't have to gulp pills to be in a better attitude. He's not the guy that you hear being complimented by the boss on the one commercial about how he's such a greater golfer today and such a greater performer on the job because he's gulping a type of a relaxing pill. This is the type fella who has such a sound mind that he doesn't need pills to relax. He's got a balanced, sound mind. He's able to cope with his environment. He's able to take a few kicks and bruises along the pathway and able to overcome, able to get up and go right on. Are you going to marry somebody who comes apart when she has problems at home? You going to marry a young man? Maybe he's a real fine dancer today, but what happens when he gets chewed out on the job? He comes home and he's all frustrated, and the first thing you know, you find him in the bathtub, dead. You know that suicide is a fantastic social problem today? Let me talk about bachelors just to show you what I mean about this thing of mental adjustment and how important it is to get to know the complete and the deep mental outlook of a prospective mate. You know, the American bachelor has been portrayed in motion pictures and novels as this sort of a Rock Hudson type, the tall, elegantly tailored, this handsome young fellow whose pad with its Acrolan pile has been the playground for dozens of chic models, career girls, stewardesses, and the like. You know, to the hostess, this bachelor is the indispensable extra dinner guest and the always potential blind date for her very best visiting friends from out of town. To the husband, he's to be envied because the husband is portrayed as the poor boob who's been trapped in a marriage he wishes he could get out of, but this elegantly attired bachelor is having a wild, wild time and probably living in one of these dazzling, glamorous new apartments you've read about where everybody is single and there's a pool in the middle and you just can't even begin to believe the fantastic enjoyment that these people are having in this fantastic, glittering, glamorous, single people's apartment. But you suspect that there must be all kinds of delicious goings on. Balderdash, let me tell you that when a team of scientists put the American Bachelor under a microscope, according to Newsweek magazine, their investigations disclosed a rather different picture from what a lot of people have assumed. Now, you know, in accordance with a popular view of marriage as a triumph for women and a defeat for men, a report put out by the Mental Research Institute of Berkeley, California, and which appeared in the American Journal of Psychiatry, said we would expect to find those men who have escaped marriage to be much better adjusted than those women who have failed to marry. This is the popular American view for you people in Hobart, Tasmania, who may not realize the way modern Americans think about it unless you've seen too many American movies and TV serials. But the data tells you otherwise. From interviews with 785 men, women, 23 years old and more, this study found the bachelor was nearly three times as likely to describe himself unhappy and miserable as the single girl, and he was four times as likely to dislike his job. In other words, he's frustrated on the job and he's unhappy at home. Single men, who constitute more than one quarter, mind you, of the total U.S. adult male population, 25% of them are single and therefore eligible, ladies. But also, they ranked highest among all other groups in severe neurotic symptoms. And this could mean anything from a potential kleptomaniac to a hypochondriac to persons with claustrophobia and maybe fear of fear. Phobia, maybe. And a lot of them had antisocial tendencies. And, you know, it was a severe problem that many of them, these one quarter of the adult male population who are bachelors, enjoyed defying rules. They were hostile and antisocial. Significantly, though, the study showed that more single males than single women confessed to having unhappy childhoods, but it's only the confession you're concerned with, not whether or not the childhood was happy or unhappy. As one 41-year-old bachelor explained his single state to the interviewers, he said, well, what I saw of that marriage, meaning his parents, was enough for me. Continuous fights day and night. Now, this report, which was financed by a grant from the National Institute of Mental Health as a part of a larger study on alcoholism and its effects in American society, did concede that single men have remained less domesticated than married men. They retained the traits of a desire for independence and freedom from conventional rules and all that. But the study proved that a bachelor's life may grow increasingly dismal. While the single woman maintains many close friendships and family ties, and she even may assume the role of a sort of a mother figure to various nieces and nephews and other people's children, and she'll have more social contacts and that type of thing, she's not happy. Oh, no, she's not happy because she's breaking a basic law, which has been set in motion she may know little, if anything, of. But it shows that regardless of that, the single man may tend to become more and more isolated until finally taken to its extreme. Here's a character sitting on his pad, cross-legged, staring with little circles for eyes at society, fearful of everybody and everything, and pretty miserable and disgusted with himself. And they become introverts and harder to get to know. Now, that's a fact, and you ought to think about it because that means 25% of adult American males. So you young eligible women who are looking for young eligible men might as well realize that one out of 10 of them you run across is going to already be in such mental problems that he needs psychiatric treatment, and that other percentages of them have potential arthritis, but it hasn't been discovered yet. Other vast percentages of them have possible heart attacks. They're going to die at age 47 to 55. Others of them are going to be bald in three more years and may already be wearing a hairpiece. Now, that's a rather dismal picture, and you know, you can find fellas that this doesn't apply to. You really can if you're willing to look. You can. And, of course, some of you probably ought to marry people to whom this applies to anyhow, but at least you ought to know about it. Now, there are cures for all these problems. I'm not saying I can keep your hair from falling out, and I'm not saying it's wrong to wear a hairpiece if it does, either. But I'm saying that there are cures for what ails us, if we're willing to discover what is the cause. Just like there are cures for American marriages, if we were willing to look into the cause of American marital unhappiness. And what makes marriages unhappy is preparation for marriage. Marriage is based on a poor footing in the first place. marriages that should never be entered into in the first place. And if this series of programs can help young people who are not yet married to avoid making the same mistakes that hundreds of thousands and millions of your peers have made, then it will have been well worthwhile. Now, if it makes some of the rest of you wish you'd heard things like this from your parents or somebody else before you got married, well, that's fine and gratifying too, but the point is, it's not too late for you if you're even willing to take seriously some of these things you're hearing and to listen to the stats on it, to find out what's the matter, to look into your own private situation and to ask yourself, is it worth saving? You know, if you would ask yourself, when was the last time I told my mate how much I really appreciate him or her? When was the last time I said, I love you? And not only that, but when was the last time I said, I like you? I like to be with you. I enjoy your company. When was the last time you said, thank you? I really appreciate that. When was the last time you showed just a little bit of affection? A pat, a nod, a smile, a wink across the room, flowers or a card? Sure, they work too. But not quite so much as that little gesture of friendliness and companionship that goes an awful lot longer and stays with you a lot longer than flowers that soon wilt. Marriage has been described as a beautiful garden that needs an awful lot of care, but a lot of people have been walking all over it with old dirty muddy boots and hobnails and wonder why it's unhappy. If you said I do, why don't you? By all means, if you're caught in a situation where you feel you're caught, if you're in a marriage that really is not as happy as you wish it could be, why don't you give this article a chance? Your marriage can be happy. Now, in dating, that's something else again that I'll continue discussing. And about the right kind of dating, who you ought to date, when, at what age, what is constructive dating, what should you think about, what should you talk about, where should you go, how much money should you expect to spend on a date. The statistics about what young American men are spending on girls are a little staggering when you compare it with their average income or allowance. The kind of dating that's going on today, the evils of it in general, and also maybe some of the good parts about it. And this is based upon interviews with young people and what they say about it, not my own opinions at all, but based upon extensive and exhaustive research. So I'll continue in this series, and remember, the first thing to think about physical health and the second one about mental health is going to be real important later. And a lot of you that find yourselves a little unhappy in your marriages today would wish you'd thought about at least just those two things, if nothing else, way ahead of time. But it's still not too late if you want to write for this article and get busy on it. And also the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing, because it has a great deal to say about marriages as well. Now, the current number of the Plain Truth magazine has an article right along the same line on the seven laws of radiant health. God Almighty, who does exist and whose existence you can prove, did not intend you to be sick and feel only about half alive. Here is an article on the seven laws of radiant health, how to have joyous, healthful, thrilling, and exciting life. Another article on Now, a new kind of revolution stalks the Iron Curtain, and the one on the greatest story never told. It's free of charge, no price, as is the article on how to have a happy marriage, and the one on how to solve family arguments if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.